Well, we're going to move into the book of 2 Kings this morning. 1 and 2 Kings are full of many, many engaging, fascinating stories, and it's part of the Bible that I enjoy reading the most because of the fascination of all those stories. Today's stories, the text we're given in 2 Kings chapter 5, is a story about a Syrian general who seeks healing from a prophet in Israel. Syria and Israel did this a lot back then. And so this general seeks healing from a prophet in Israel. I want to just dive into the story this morning. 2 Kings chapter 5, starting with verse 1. Naaman, a general for the king of Aram, was a great man and highly regarded by his master because through him the Lord, that's capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, that's indication that that's Israel's God's name, because the Lord had given victory to Aram through him. This man was a mighty warrior, but he had a skin disease. Now, Aramean raiding parties had gone out and captured a young girl from the land of Israel. She served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master could come before the prophet who lives in Samaria. He would cure him of his skin disease." So Naaman went and told his master what the young girl from the land of Israel had said. Then Aram's king said, "Go ahead, I will send a letter to Israel's king." So Naaman left. He took along 10 kikars of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. And he brought the letter to Israel's king. It read, "Along with this letter, I'm sending you my servant Naaman so you can cure him of his skin disease." When the king of Israel read the letter, he ripped his clothes and said, "What? Am I God to hand out death and life? But this king writes me asking me to cure someone of his skin disease. You must realize he wants to start a fight with me." When Elisha, the man of God, heard that Israel's king had ripped his clothes, he sent word to the king, "Why did you rip your clothes? Let the man come to me, so he'll know there's a prophet in Israel." Naaman arrived with his horses and chariots. He stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent out a messenger who said, "Go wash 7 times in the Jordan River, then your skin will be restored and become clean." But Naaman went away in anger. He said, "I thought for sure he'd come out, stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the bad spot, and cure the skin disease. Aren't there rivers, the Abana and the Pharpar, aren't those rivers better than all Israel's waters? Couldn't I wash in them and get clean?" So he turned away and proceeded to leave in anger. Naaman's servants came up to him and spoke to him, "Our father, if the prophet had told you to do something difficult, wouldn't you have done it? All he said to you was, wash and become clean." So Naaman went down and bathed in the Jordan 7 times, just as the man of God had said. His skin was restored like that of a young boy, and he became clean. He returned to the man of God with all his attendants. He came and stood before Elisha, saying, "Now I know for certain that there's no God anywhere on earth except in Israel." All right. Naaman was a general, or maybe secretary of defense, we're not sure, for Aram, which is modern-day Syria. Modern-day Syria. He'd been powerful and successful because Israel's God, the Lord, had helped him. Now, there's something interesting in itself. Why would Israel's God help a Syrian general have victories, especially when in just a few verses we learned that Syria had been making raids into Israel? They were enemies of one another, at least at some level. And why would the Lord help a Syrian general? And that's a question for another time, but it's one that Jesus takes note of when he referenced this story in Luke chapter 4. He was basically saying the Lord helps more than just Israelites. Okay? But back to Naaman. He had a problem. Though he was immensely successful and victorious, he had a skin disease that was debilitating physically and socially. And what I'm interested in this morning is how this problem of Naaman's, how his problem of a skin disease gets solved. I'm interested in how he gets healed because there are a lot of steps that go into his healing. Now, some might say, well, the Lord just healed him. Or others might say, well, he was finally healed when he obeyed what Elisha said to do and went and washed in the Jordan River, and all those things would be true. But in between those things, there's all these steps, these characters in the story, these things that have to happen before Naaman actually got into the Jordan River and was washed clean. And I'm interested in all of these steps this morning because I think they have something to say to us about how problems get solved, about how we find healing, and even perhaps how we avoid international incidents like the king of Israel and the king of Aram avoided in this story. So I want to notice this morning all the steps that led to Naaman's problem being solved. All right? All the steps in this story. And the first thing to notice is that Naaman and his wife had a slave girl. Is that big enough to see? Israeli slave girl, all right? They had a slave girl who was from Israel. She'd been captured in a military raid, presumably one in which Naaman was involved, against Israel. And they brought her back as a slave. And it was this girl who knew about the prophet Elisha's healing power, the prophet from Samaria, that was the capital of Israel at this time. It was this girl that knew about that power and told her mistress, Naaman's wife, one of her owners there. A prophet in Israel can heal my master, she said. All right? This girl told Naaman's wife that Elisha could heal Naaman, and then Naaman's wife told him. It's not explicitly in the story, but we know it happened because he, next, went to the king of Aram, of Syria, and told the king what the slave girl from Israel had said. And the king says, sure, go check it out, Naaman. I'll send a letter to the king of Israel endorsing you and your healing. Then Naaman set off with a request for healing to the king of Israel. Now remember, he's going into hostile territory here, to Israel's king. And when the king of Israel got his letter, he ripped his clothes. He ripped his clothes. And to explain why the king ripped his clothes, we have to say he was distraught. He was desperate. Why was he desperate? Well, we have to understand some things about that culture. Naaman had brought him gifts. He'd brought him silver, gold, 10 changes of clothing. Did anybody else find that odd? I mean, maybe he'd heard the king didn't change his robe often enough or something like that. He just wasn't stylish. I don't know. But he brings 10 changes of clothing. And in that culture, those gifts would have obligated the king of Israel to do what Naaman requested. Okay, so there would have been this obligation back and forth. I give you gifts, you do what I request. And the king knew what Naaman requested, the king could not accomplish. So he's desperate. He rips his clothes. Now he's probably really glad that Naaman brought 10 pairs of clothes, right? Naaman's going, oh, this is why I brought him. He's going to go around ripping his clothes. He ripped his clothes. And the king ripped his clothes as a sign of desperation because now he imagined that he was being tricked or manipulated into international conflict. Right? This is the way the king of Israel thinks. Naaman brings me gifts. He makes an unreasonable request that I can't fulfill. What's happening here is Syria is going to come to war against me. That's why the king is desperate and rips his clothes. And now we notice that the problem isn't just Naaman's skin disease. The problem is also an international incident is boiling into the possibility of war. And that's where Elisha stepped in to illustrate that it's more important to have a prophet of God in Israel than it is even to have a king. And this isn't a part of the story that I want to focus on, but one of the things that's happening here in these stories in 1 Kings is that the stories are telling us it's more important to have God and God's prophets with Israel than it is to have kings. So Elisha says, send Naaman, send the man to me, I'll take care of him. So Naaman again travels, this time to Elisha's place, where Elisha doesn't even come out of his house, but just sends out his servant who says, Naaman, go wash in the Jordan River. Go take a bath, Naaman. Then finally, when Naaman angrily refused to do what Elisha had suggested, we get yet another step in his process of healing, in this whole process of solving these problems, and that is Naaman's own servants go and talk to Naaman and talk him into doing what Elisha said, go wash in the Jordan River, and he's finally healed. Problem solved, but not so easily, right? Not without a lot of drama, not without a lot of moving parts and a lot of characters involved to finally solve Naaman's problem and help him find healing. And there is something unique about all of these steps, all of these moving parts, all of these characters, something noteworthy in this story, which I believe points to a lesson for us about problem solving, about healing, about liberation, perhaps about how to avoid conflicts. Here it is. Almost every step of the way in this story, the more powerful person listens to, pays attention to, and acts upon what the less powerful person says to do. Almost every step along the way, the more powerful person listens to the one that he or she may often ignore, the one who's less powerful. Think about all the people in the story who had to humble themselves and listen to someone who was less powerful than they were, whom they might have easily ignored or whom they often did ignore. Think about all the steps, all the people that did that. First of all, Naaman's wife listened to a foreign slave girl. And one could hardly be less powerful in that culture or in ours than to be a foreigner, a slave, and a girl. And yet Naaman's wife chose to listen to what the girl said and respect her enough to pass along this word to her husband Naaman. Then Naaman, secondly, listened to his wife. And admittedly, it's an assumption to say that Naaman didn't normally listen to his wife, but women in that society were often ignored, certainly were not as socially and politically powerful as men. But Naaman has immense power politically. He has patriarchal power. And yet, he listened to this woman who was his wife. Well, you might say he was desperate. He had this disease. He was desperate to be healed, so of course he would listen. And perhaps that's true, but nonetheless, he listened to someone who was less powerful than he was. And not only did he listen, but he believed in that word enough to take action based upon what his wife said. In fact, in a sense, he listened to both his wife and to the foreign slave girl. Then, Aram's king listened to Naaman. And there are power dynamics operating here. The king pays attention to, listens to, respects, takes action upon what someone less powerful than he says. And obviously, at times, kings listen to advisors. But you understand the normal dynamic there is not for the king to listen to and do what the servant says. It's the other way around. And the king of Aram says, yeah, go ahead. Go to Israel. He listened to someone who was less powerful than himself. And it didn't end there. For next, the king of Israel listened to Elisha when Elisha sent word saying, send Naaman to me. Again, you could say, well, the king was desperate. He thought an international war was about to explode, and that may be so. But kings don't always listen to what prophets say. In fact, you could argue that all through the books of 1 and 2 Kings, one of the things that we're being taught is that kings don't listen to God's word. They don't listen to God's prophets. And that's why we have this whole destruction of Jerusalem and carrying off exiles into Babylon, because the kings did not listen to the prophets' words. But here in this story, the king listens to what the prophet says, does what the prophet says, listens to someone he might otherwise ignore. Finally, it was only when Naaman's servants pled with him that he listened and did what Elisha had instructed. Once again, let's notice that Naaman listened to and changed his behavior because of what his servants said. It's not the normal power dynamic. I'm not saying that it never happens, that masters never listen to servants. What I'm saying is the normal dynamic is the servants listen to the masters and do what the masters say to do. Here we get a reversal of it. Here the master listens to and does what the servants say to do. And when all of this listening to the less powerful people in the story takes place, problems are solved. Naaman is healed. A war, we might say, was averted. I believe that this narrative teaches us to listen to those whom we often ignore. I believe it teaches us that sometimes God speaks through and even heals through those who are less powerful than we are, those whom we don't expect to offer solutions to our problems, those whom we don't suppose will have anything to offer us. The story challenges us to listen to those who are less powerful than ourselves and whom we often ignore, and it dares us to dream that their voices and their insights may have significant answers to the issues and the problems we face and the healing that we all need. Imagine how if we paid attention to the less powerful among us, the ones we often ignore, how it might change our ideas, our thinking, and the way we approach different problems in our own lives personally and in our whole lives socially and politically. For instance, imagine how we might approach the issues of immigration, a hot topic in our society right now. If we listen primarily, not to what the politicians or the talking heads in the media said, but to foreign slave girls. Girls who were migrating to our country in order to escape slavery in their own places. Think that would affect how we saw the issue, how we dealt with the issue of immigration. Or imagine how we might approach issues of around the gender wage gap or about sexual harassment in the workplace if men begin listening to the voices of their wives and daughters and sisters. And not only listened to their voices, but actually believed what they were saying and took action that validated those women's perceptions and agendas. Or think about how we might approach healthcare issues if we ask people who don't have health insurance, who can't obtain it for some reason, or can't afford to pay for it, to share their stories and ideas and begin taking seriously what they have to say. Obviously, not everything that people who are often ignored will suggest will solve every problem that we can imagine. But in Naaman's story, healing would never have come had not one person after another listened to, paid attention to, acted upon what someone who was less powerful than they were said to do. Two texts in the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, one in Exodus and one in Numbers, tell us that even God listens to those who are less powerful than God is and makes changes in response to what those people said. Exodus 32, Some of you remember this story. Moses goes up the mountain to talk to God, and while he's up there, the children of Israel down below, they get impatient with Moses' return. Where is he? Where is he? They kind of name Aaron their leader, and they talk Aaron into letting them build a golden calf. And they say, this is our God. We're going to worship this golden calf. In Numbers 14, the Israelites begin to complain and to grumble because they say, Moses and Aaron, you're just leading us around this desert. You're not taking us to any place where we can live. It's miserable out here. And in both cases, God says to Moses, I'm sick and tired of these people and their lack of faith, their lack of trust. Don't they remember I took them out of slavery, out of Egypt, across the Red Sea? Don't they remember that? And God says, I'm sick of these people. I'm going to destroy them. I'm going to start over with a new family through you, Moses. And in both cases, Moses says, God, don't do it. Don't do it. Think of all the bad things that will come if you do it. And in both of those cases, God listened to Moses and did what Moses said to do. And I know I'm belaboring the point, but you understand that's not the way the God-Moses relationship usually worked. Usually, God told Moses what to do, and Moses listened and did what God said to do. But in these cases, God listened to Moses and did what Moses said to do. Why do I tell you that? Because it's not only the characters in Naaman's story that give us an example to listen to people that are less powerful than us, but God sets that example for us as well. God sets an example for us to listen to people less powerful than ourselves and take appropriate action. So I want to ask this morning, who are the people in your life who you often ignore, who maybe don't have the societal power that you have, that you usually don't listen to? I want to ask, are there individuals you've been trained not to pay attention to what they say? Are there groups of people that you've been taught to dismiss or ignore? And I want to say that I think Naaman's story and God teach us to stop and listen to just those people. They might be agents through which we find problems solved, through which we find healing, liberation, salvation. So this week, I want to ask you to listen to someone or some group of people that you usually ignore who are maybe dispossessed of power in our society, to listen, get curious, and learn from them. Perhaps they'll be a part of your healing, change, transformation. Naaman, as you know, ended up healed of his skin disease. And Israel's king ended up avoiding a confrontation with Aram, with Syria. And it happened because every step along the way, one person listened to, paid attention to, and acted upon what a less powerful person said. Each of them played a role in how God healed Naaman. Each of them were a part of solving Naaman's problem with his skin disease and solving the problem between Israel and Aram. So may we be people who listen to those who are often ignored, to those who are less powerful than ourselves. So we are a part of God's healing, saving, liberating action in our own lives and in the lives of others.